from Australia and New Zealand to Europe and all the way to the US. Palestine supporters shout in unison against Israel on the anniversary of its creation. Lebanon is holding key parliamentary elections with economic challenges a big issue on voters' minds. And Swedish people protest plans to join NATO as foreign ministers from the military alliance assess the likelihood of membership for Sweden and Finland. This is World News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank have held rallies to mark the Nakba Day, or the Day of Catastrophe. That's when Israel was created 74 years ago. Demonstrators wave Palestinian flags. They held placards with signs stressing their right to return to their ancestral land. Protesters also carried pictures of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was fatally shot during an Israeli raid on Wednesday. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas issued a statement. It's pledged to continue the resistance until the Palestinian territories and Al-Aqsa Mosque are liberated from the Israeli occupation. The Nakba marks the beginning of the expulsion of Palestinians from their homeland in 1948.
A day reminding of calamity and ruin, of losing a homeland and means of livelihood. That's what Palestinians are reminded of each year on May the 15th. They call it the Nakba, meaning a catastrophe in Arabic. On that day in 1948, the so-called State of Israel was established. Attempts to create Israel had begun several decades ago, when Zionism emerged as a political ideology in Eastern Europe. Those attempts were shored up by Britain in 1917, when it issued the Balfour Declaration, backing the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine. The declaration was included in a British mandate, itself part of a system the winners of the First World War agreed upon to rule the territories they had captured. Under the system, Palestine was ruled by Britain. Different reasons have been mentioned for why the British included the Balfour Declaration in their mandate for Palestine. But whatever those reasons are, the declaration is widely viewed as a catalyst for the Nakba, a disastrous time many historians refer to as the climax of the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. To create Israel, major Palestinian cities and hundreds of villages had already come under attack, scores of massacres carried out, and hundreds of thousands of people expelled from their homes. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians continued in the years afterwards. In 1967, during a bloody conflict, Israel occupied more Palestinian land, including Jerusalem al-Quds, a city of great importance to the Palestinian people. Today, Israeli atrocities have taken other forms, from arbitrary detentions and killing of the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank to deadly airstrikes on the blockaded Gaza Strip. Decades on since the Nakba, more than 7 million Palestinians still live in refugee camps, mainly in neighboring Arab states. But wherever they live, all share the same hope that one day they will return to their ancestral homes. They say they have the right to return.
Okay, now speaking of Nakba Day, let's cross over to Ramallah. Mona Kandil is there. And I talked to you, Mona, a few hours ago, and there was huge crowds in your background marking the occasion. I wonder if it is over or still people are holding the rally.
Well, it's over, but some Palestinian youths chose to commemorate the Nakba Day on their own way. Some Palestinians have marched following the commemoration event that was held at Al-Manara Square in Ramallah and marched towards the area where Israeli military checkpoint of Beit Il is held. It's very near Ramallah and at the entrance to the illegal settlement of Beit Il as well. Palestinians there threw stones at the Israeli soldiers stationing at the military checkpoint of Beit Il at the entrance to the illegal settlement and burned some tires as well. Israeli forces fired heavy tear gas towards the protesters there, and the clashes had been taking place, or the fighting in this way had been taking place up till the moment. We have to say that the Nakba Day or the catastrophe is very painful for the Palestinians. As you have mentioned, today thousands of Palestinians held rallies, not only in Ramallah city, but elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, all across the occupied West Bank areas, to commemorate the Nakba, to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the Zionist militias that at that day wanted to create what's known today as Israel. We are speaking about, at that time, some 700,000 Palestinians were forced to leave their homes and their villages. They became refugees in several Arab countries like Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, as well as in the occupied West Bank, as well as in the Gaza Strip and in Al-Quds as well. But Palestinians are insisting as usual, and today again, it's an opportunity to remind the world that still Palestinian refugees who are still adherent to their right of return are still adherent to the only choice that resistance may be the only solution to return them back to their homeland. We have also to mention that during today's commemoration, as every year, a 74-second siren was sounded across the occupied West Bank exactly at 12:30 noon time, marking the 74 years that have passed since the Palestinians in Nakba.
All right, thank you for that. Monica Andel, our correspondent in Akibat Ramallah. Now, protesters have also filled the streets in countries around the world in solidarity with the Palestinians on Nakba Day. Now, thousands hit the streets of Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S., carrying Palestinian flags, chanting anti-Israel slogans. The rallies took place in the cities of Sydney, Melbourne, Auckland, San Francisco, and San Diego. Similar demonstrations were held in Europe on Saturday. Protesters there denounced Israeli brutalities against Palestinians. But a German capital, Berlin, banned all public commemorations of Nakba, sparking criticism from pro-Palestine groups. The rallies in Europe were held in major cities, including in Vienna, Copenhagen, and London.
Yet again, London streets have been brought to a standstill by pro-Palestinian activists calling for an end to Israeli crimes against humanity in the occupied territories. Such events are building momentum, and the calls for the last apartheid on earth to be dismantled are growing louder.
Atrocities are committed in the occupied Palestinian territories on a daily basis, from ethnic cleansing to murder. And for decades, Western media has managed to downplay the severity of the situation. But now, with social media and so many cameras recording the madness, it's almost impossible to bury the truth.
Only days earlier, a prominent Palestinian journalist died when she was shot in the face by Israeli forces. She was reporting on an army raid in the West Bank. Her death caused outrage, and scenes of her coffin bearers being beaten by Israelis made headlines. 229 rights groups have called for Israel to be held accountable for what they call a premeditated assassination. At Saturday's protest, Shirin Abu Akleh's life and work was honoured.
I feel that we have the duty to come here and to do that and to speak out. For example, just Shireen the other day was murdered, and all the reports, the news channels, they're reporting it as clashes. Even in her funeral, the clips that I saw were disgusting. And still, again, the way that they are being reported is as clashes. Now, Germany, they wanted to hold a protest for the murdered journalist, but Germany was not allowing them to do so.
A raft of new measures limiting public protest were recently added to the already controversial policing bill, and it might also become illegal to boycott, divest, and sanction entities like Israel, robbing public bodies of their right to make ethical decisions. It's the information age, and it remains to be seen how the UK hopes to maintain its democratic persona now that its grip on the media has loosened. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Palestinian has succumbed to wounds he sustained from Israeli gunfire in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Dawood al-Zubaydi was shot by snipers during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp 2 days ago. He was a former prisoner in Israeli jails. Jenin has recently turned into a flashpoint city due to repeated Israeli attacks. Regime forces have been raiding the area in search of suspects of deadly Palestinian operations deep inside Israel, including capital Tel Aviv. Several Palestinians have been killed in the Israeli raid so far. Veteran Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh was also fatally shot by Israeli forces while covering one such raid. Now, elsewhere in Lebanon, people heading for polls to cast their ballots for a new parliament in the hope of reviving the country's battered economy. Some 4 million people are eligible to vote across 15 electoral districts. They will be picking from among 700 candidates contesting for a 128-seat parliament. Results are expected on Monday. The elections are held amid an unprecedented economic crisis that began in 2019, leading to a currency collapse and plunging over 70% of the population into poverty. The last election was held in 2018 with the Hezbollah resistance movement and its allies winning the majority of seats. The Hezbollah chief blames the crisis on a U.S.-led conspiracy against his country. The next parliament is due to vote on key reforms required by the International Monetary Fund to unlock financial support. It will also elect a new president to replace Michel Aoun, whose term ends at the end of October. Now, Alain Aoun is a Lebanese lawmaker and a member of the Free Patriotic Movement. A correspondent talked to him at one of Beirut's polling stations where he outlined the challenges ahead for Lebanon and the next parliament.
The main battle is to survive after all what happened, all the campaigns that tried to accuse us of all devils and of all evils. And today I think we are seeking for the trust of the people, for the renewal of this trust, and we believe we will get it, actually.
What does Lebanon need? What does
Lebanon need? Lebanon needs wise people, clean people, people who are working for the general interest, not for their own interest. And I guess that this is the way I see my duty, my involvement in politics, together with my colleagues. And I believe, as people, I hope that we'll renew this trust. So in order to be able to continue this mission that we have, because Lebanon today needs us, needs all efforts. And I hope that we'll be able to recover from the collapse that happened. This is the challenge for the next 4 years, and I believe that we need good people, good intentions for the coming years, and I hope that we'll be part of it.
What is your priority? Are we talking about drilling natural resources, or is there another priority?
Priority now is for economical recovery, and this is why we have to implement all reforms that are required in order for Lebanon to save the opportunity that is being given in order to help. So I believe that today the first priority for any parliament and from any government to come is indeed to start the recovery process and finish today and take decisions, final decision in terms of reforms and in terms of what is needed for Lebanon to stand up again.
Now, monitoring Senator Fili with the Russian Defense Ministry says that Syrian air defenses shot down 16 missiles and a drone during Israeli air raids on Friday. The head of the Russian Reconciliation Center for Syria says that Israeli warplanes fired a total of 22 missiles at a research center in the northwestern city of Masayev that support near the city of Banias. He says the attack left 5 Syrians dead and 2 injured. On Saturday, Damascus called on the UN to issue a clear condemnation of what it calls the act of aggression. Israel frequently launches airstrikes on Syria. Damascus has repeatedly denounced the attacks as a violation of its sovereignty and international law. The Swedish government's plans to join NATO has sparked criticism in the country, with protesters gathering in the capital of Stockholm to express their opposition.
We don't think that NATO is an organization for peace. NATO has been making wars without any NATO countries have been attacked militarily. But still, they have destroyed a large part of the Middle East and Afghanistan and so forth. And they have, you know, they go out their own jurisdiction to fight other countries. And it has caused a lot of problems in the world. We don't want to be an enemy with Russia. We believe in dialogue and try to, you know, make agreements and so forth. We want to stay neutral and alliance, with no alliance.
A local organization called Say No to NATO organized a protest. It says that the government would be shirking its main responsibility of protecting Sweden's independence if it decided to join the military alliance. The ruling Social Democratic Party is scheduled to explain its decision-making process over NATO membership later today. Meantime, foreign ministers from NATO's 30 member states are holding 2 days of talks in Berlin that are focused on the membership bids of Sweden and Finland. A formal application to join NATO is expected within days. NATO saying it's confident that it can quickly admit the two Nordic countries despite initial objections from Turkey. Russia has warned the two states against joining NATO. At least 10 people are dead after a gunman opens fire at a supermarket in the city of Buffalo in the U.S. state of New York. Several other people got injured in that incident, while most of the victims have been identified as African Americans. The police investigated the incident as both a hate crime and a case of racially motivated violent extremism. The alleged suspect is in custody. He has not been identified yet. For more information about his shooting, let's listen to what the Buffalo Police Commissioner stated in a press conference a short while ago.
At approximately 2:30 today, an individual who the mayor stated is not from this area and is from hours away drove to Buffalo, went to 1275 Jefferson Avenue to the Tops Market. He exited his vehicle. He was very heavily armed. He had tactical gear. He had a tactical helmet on. He had a camera that he was live streaming what he was doing. The individual exited his car and engaged four individuals. He shot four people in the parking lot. Three of those were deceased. One individual at this time is surviving the injury. The individual went inside. As I said, he was an 18-year-old white male, walked into the store and began engaging customers inside the store. One of the individuals inside the store is the security guard, a beloved security guard, who is a retired Buffalo police officer, a hero in our eyes, engaged the suspect, fired multiple shots, struck the suspect, but because he had heavily armed, armored plating on, that bullet had no round. The suspect engaged our retired officer, and he was ultimately shot and deceased at the scene. He continued to work his way through the store. He worked his way back towards the front of the store. Buffalo police immediately respond, engage the suspect in the vestibule of the store. And at that point, the suspect put the gun to his own neck. Buffalo police personnel, two patrol officers, talked the suspect into dropping the gun. He dropped the gun, took off some of his tactical gear, surrendered at that point, and he was led outside, put in a police car, and transported to the Buffalo police headquarters.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. Another issue which is very important and which is a long-term project is the issue of economic growth without oil. Just like the countries which do not have any oil and which have a good rate of economic growth and progress, and they are not a small number either. Of course, this cannot happen in the short run. Rather, it will happen in the long run. It is not a task that can be carried out in the space of 1-2 days and by one administration. If administrations show determination, this might be achieved. by two ATIA administrations. Another issue is to see where and how we must spend revenues. If there is a resolution in the case of foreign revenues from a particular area, these revenues should not be allocated to unnecessary imports. Rather, they must be allocated to infrastructural projects. The country needs infrastructural projects, railroad transports, the various matters related to knowledge-based companies, and transit routes with neighboring countries are the infrastructure projects that must be carried out. The country needs these.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Industries must be renovated. Many of our industries are old, and their renovation requires revenues. The revenues must be allocated to these things. It should not be the case that the gate to luxury products opens as soon as we get our hands on some revenues. It is said that many of the products are entered via smuggling. Well, smuggling must be prevented as well. This is really a very great and important task. Some people import dog food and cosmetics at an exorbitant money. Not a single cent should be allocated to these things, let alone spending hugely on them. What I want to say is that we have many infrastructural tasks. The issue of the country's water is an infrastructural task whose resolution is completely possible, but this requires money. Fortunately, we know that these administrations has done very good task in this regard, and it is an ongoing process. These tasks must be carried out. The issue of water is a very important issue.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
A state of shock in America, especially among members of the Native American community, following the identification of over 500 student deaths at U.S. boarding schools. The deaths of Native American children were confirmed as part of the first stage of a federal study of boarding schools that operated for over a century. They were supposed to assimilate the indigenous children into white society between 1819 and 1969. The number of deaths could be only the tip of the iceberg, as the U.S. Interior Department warns that with further investigation, the number of known student deaths could climb to the thousands or even tens of thousands. The initial findings of the comprehensive study have turned a spotlight on the dark history of more than 400 Native American boarding schools notorious for brutal conditions. Hundreds of thousands of indigenous children were forced by the U.S. federal government to attend the institutions. The children were separated from their families by force, forbidden from speaking their languages, and often abused. A large number of them never returned home. The painful legacy of the notorious system operated by the government and churches has been felt deeply across Indian country and through generations. The high-profile federal review was ordered by U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland last year after the discovery of unmarked graves at the site of former residential schools in neighboring Canada.
So it's the same history, really. There's really, the thing is, the United States had such a huge population of Native people, such a wealth of anthropology. If you could imagine what anthropologists today would give to be able to hurriedly record all those languages and take pictures, but they're gone. You can't even record the dead civilizations. And if they were allowed to live, the earth would be so much wealthier. It's really just a terrible, terrible tragedy. That is the real genocide. That's genocide number one.
The U.S. Interior Department's report was released on Wednesday. It highlighted instances of beating, withholding of food and solitary confinement, and other forms of abuse at U.S. boarding schools. U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, whose grandparents attended such schools, seems to be very serious about the investigation. She has ordered her agency to fully investigate what remains of the evidence of the horrific abuses.
Now we are uniquely positioned to assist in the effort to recover the dark history of these institutions that have haunted our families for too long.
She says the consequences of federal Indian boarding school policies, including the trauma caused by the family separation and cultural eradication inflicted on generations of children as young as 4 years old, are heartbreaking and undeniable. Brian Newland, the Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Indian Affairs, believes further investigation is needed to better understand the lasting effects of the boarding school system on American Indians. Newland said there is not a single American Indian, Alaskan Native, or Native Hawaiian in the country whose life has not been impacted by the notorious boarding school system. Meanwhile, the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition warned that efforts to find the remains of the indigenous children must continue until the United States fully accounts for the genocide committed against Native American children. The latest findings are shedding light on the plight of Native Americans in the United States. They are still suffering from many problems, including racial discrimination. Pressure is mounting on the U.S. establishment to come to terms with and learn lessons from its dark past.
On May 10, 2021, Israel began an offensive on the Gaza Strip that went on for 11 days. The regime razed several buildings in the meantime, including a tower housing the bureaus of several news outlets, including Al Jazeera's. The bombings killed over 250 Palestinians in the besieged enclave, including dozens of women and children. But this time, unlike other incidents where Israel launched attacks on the Strip, Palestinian resistance movement struck back hard, killing at least 12 Israelis.
We
have to remember that while there have been deaths on both sides, the deaths of Palestinians far outnumber those of the Israelis, probably by close to 1,000 to 1. So there is not a lot of importance given to Palestinian lives. This has been an ongoing, long-standing policy of the world. It's completely unjust. It ignores international law and human rights, but this has been the case. But any efforts to bring rights to the Palestinians, rights that they are entitled to by international law simply because they live, because they exist, will be opposed, because no other country wants to risk its economic ties with Israel.
The conflict had been in the making for several weeks prior, when Israeli troops intensified their crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied Al-Quds during the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. The protests that had erupted at the regime's attempt to evict several families from the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah also escalated the tensions. The devastating conflict ended in an Egypt-brokered ceasefire that went into effect on May 21st. The battle, however, significantly altered the perceptions about the military capabilities of Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The 2021 confrontation is widely hailed as a victory for Hamas and other resistance movements in Gaza, not only militarily and on the ground, but also morally on an international level. Demonstrations in solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza and the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood were held across the world. A wider and more diverse group of people around the globe called for an end to the conflict and Israel's aggression, which helped raise awareness about the plight of Palestinians to a much higher extent.
Israeli invisibility can mean a number of things. You're referring to militarily, but there's also the invincibility that it had for so many years as being seen as the victim, the innocent victim just trying to defend itself. That has certainly been shattered. People around the world, even if they support Israel, see Israel as the aggressor.
A year on, Tel Aviv is once again intensifying the pressure on the Palestinians. Israeli forces and settlers have repeatedly raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound over the past few weeks, a location that's considered Islam's third holiest site. In response, there has been a spike in the number of deadly Palestinian retaliatory operations across the occupied territories. Palestinians say the attacks are a natural response to Israel's desecration of Al-Aqsa, an issue they warn is their red line. The mounting tensions between Palestinians and Israelis are raising fears about another confrontation. But the events over the past couple of years have indicated that Palestinians will continue to fight for what they believe in and that they can inflict pain on the other side, too.
Europe's largest economy, Germany, is going through a historic phase. Inflation rates have risen sharply, reaching a 40-year high, with soaring energy prices being the key driving force. According to the German Federal Statistics Agency, the Statist, consumer prices were about 7.5% higher in April compared to last year. Berlin also faces an imminent recession in case of a gas supply cut from Russia. The latest remarks by the chief executive officer of a major commercial bank in Germany have increased concerns inside the country. Manfred Knopf has warned that the energy supply in Germany is at risk, which may lead to the spread of bankruptcies in the country. Quoted by a German business newspaper, Knopf said the energy supply is at risk, supply chains are breaking in addition to high inflation in the country. He also warned that bankruptcies in German markets are probably going to increase. According to the executive, almost a third of Germany's foreign trade has been impacted as well. Germany is facing soaring energy prices and a skyrocketing inflation due to the imposition of sanctions on Russia to pressure Moscow into ending the war in Ukraine. The measures mainly affected the financial sector and the supply of high-tech products. The real crisis in Germany lies in the Russian gas, on which it depends to a large extent. Berlin was one of the opponents within the EU to ban the import of Russian gas, but the scenario changed completely after it announced recently its readiness to accept an immediate ban on Russian oil and gas supplies. According to Forbes, Germany is one of the largest customers of Russian oil, and Berlin depends on a third of its Russian oil imports, 45% of its coal purchases, and 55% of its gas imports from Russia. Economists believe the immediate suspension of Russian energy imports would cause a severe recession in Germany.
The EU is not allowed to stop. This is what Washington ordered, and Washington orders the EU around. And the crazy situation right now is that Washington was never as powerful as it is today. This is especially funny since the American president is a weak president. So obviously somebody else is inserting this pressure into the EU from Washington, and I think that is the American deep state pushing Joe Biden and the EU, both of them. And as long as nobody stops this kind of power wielding, it will continue.
The Russia-Ukraine war is not comparable to any other war in history due to its geoeconomic significance. Both Ukraine and Russia are leading exporters of commodities such as crude, natural gas, iron and steel, wheat and edible oils that have a direct impact on inflation levels in major world economies. The conflict pushed crude prices to over $130 per barrel. There were also price increases on wheat, edible oils, and other commodities. The unilateral sanctions of the West against Russia had the unintended consequence of exacerbated inflation in Europe, East Africa, and South Asia, which were the largest importers of Russian wheat and energy. Despite the detrimental effect of sanctions on global markets, the EU unveiled plans for a Russian oil embargo earlier this week. The measure is expected to come into force within 9 months, with the time frame varying for different petroleum products. But several EU nations, including Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic, are seeking an exemption from the ban.
And of course, all these sanctions against Russia are completely unfair, unjustified, and for the first time, because we have 8th of May today, and for the first time since the Second World War, a German government is again siding with Nazis and again against Russia. And this really makes Moscow very angry, and the people too.
The founder of Brazil's Workers' Party, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who served as president for 2 terms from 2003 to 2011, has launched his presidential bid as Brazil's October 2022 presidential elections approach. Economic recovery is his campaign's main promise.
We need to put Brazil back among the best economies in the world.
In an address to his supporters in the city of Sao Paulo, Lula called for unity around democracy. He also stressed the importance of focusing on Brazil's sovereignty and environmental issues. He criticized the performance of incumbent president Jair Bolsonaro, calling his administration incompetent. Bolsonaro faces a tough challenge to win re-election against his political nemesis Lula. The latest polls indicate that Lula maintains a comfortable lead over Bolsonaro. Many Brazilians are angry at the president's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, rising inflation, and high fuel prices. Bolsonaro has been widely criticized for downplaying the coronavirus pandemic from the outset, opposing restrictive measures for fear of damaging the economy. Over 650,000 Brazilians have died of COVID-19. Lula had previously described the huge COVID-19 death toll under Bolsonaro's watch as genocide. In addition, the government's fiscal indiscipline and the prospect of double-digit inflation have prompted the central bank to increase interest rates by 5.75 percentage points since March. Now, Lula says if elected, he has grand plans for Brazil's economy. One of them is to free the country of the US dollar. Lula da Silva has proposed expanding Latin American economic integration through the creation of a common regional currency. Lula says Latin American countries should use a unified regional currency like the euro to end South America's inclination toward the US dollar and to do bilateral trade with each other instead of having to exchange for US dollars. Lula has also vowed to revive the BRICS system, integrating Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa in an independent economic architecture to challenge Western financial hegemony. The five countries represent 41% of the global population, 24% of the global gross domestic product, and 16% of the global trade. Lula da Silva has also vowed to bolster Brazil's relations with other regional countries.
Now that's important because still the US dollar is used for the vast majority of trade in Latin America, and internationally still about 70% of international transactions are done with the dollar. What that does is it strengthens the US economy and it weakens other currencies. So Lula da Silva is saying, why are we continuing to do trade with each other using the US government currency? Why don't we create our own currency to do trade with each other? And I think a lot of countries in the region think that's a very sensible policy.
The Bretton Woods Agreement was negotiated in July 1944 by delegates from 44 countries at the United Nations Monetary and Financial Conference held in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. Under the Bretton Woods system, gold was the basis for the US dollar and other currencies were pegged to the US dollar's value. Since then, the US dollar has dominated global trade and financial market. But now Washington faces a tough challenge, and that's to keep the crown on US dollar's head as the leading global reserve or fiat currency. For many years, the dollar has been the standard currency used in world trade. The US dollar currently has enormous power to infect the global economy with US inflation and the impact of US interest rate rises, both of which are managed primarily for US domestic purposes. Add to it the economic sanctions the US has imposed against other countries to achieve ends that complement or replace military efforts. Venezuela and Cuba are among the Latin American countries that have been victims of the US sanctions regime. One of the consequences of sanctions is rising inflation levels. Hence, it's natural for these economies to seek ways to circumvent America's sanctions. For instance, since 2011, China gradually shifted from trading in US dollars in favor of trade in yuan. It made agreements with Australia, Russia, Japan, Brazil, and Iran to trade in national currencies. It has been reported that in the first quarter of 2020, the share of the dollar in the bilateral trade between China and Russia fell below 50% for the first time.
It's an objective fact that the dollar is becoming less powerful over time. Even the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, which is dominated by the United States, has acknowledged that the use of dollars in international central bank reserves has been decreasing. Now, it's decreasing slowly. It's not going to disappear overnight. But in decades, I think it's quite clear that the hegemony that we've seen of the US dollar dominating the international financial system is over.
Most economies are establishing different mechanisms to circumvent the US sanctions regime and the hegemony of the US dollar. These range from using barter trade to trading in their currencies over the dollar. The world is moving toward multipolarity, and the US is no longer the world's largest trading nation, it's China. Therefore, it's only a matter of time before the US dollar loses its dominance among global currencies.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners from all around the world, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from a series of Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. Like always, we have invited a scholar from Qom Seminary Schools, Sheikh Nur Muhammad, to the show to help us answer the questions that we pose in this series of shows. Usually, we are trying to answer doubts or misconceptions and Islamic beliefs. The doubts which have been asked by different questioners from around the world. The question of the day that we need to ask it from the respected guest speaker of the show, Sheikh Nur Muhammad, is about the atheists and their beliefs and the moral standards that they actually believe in. It has been said or it has been written and talked about that even the atheists, they are actually, they resort to some moral standards. The question that comes to one's mind is that, is it possible for an atheist to have some moral standards, and what are they, and how they are actually attaching themselves to these moral standards? This is a question that we need to ask it from the respected guest speaker of the show. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation. It's a great pleasure. Sheikh, the question that comes to the mind, okay, let's say that the atheists have some moral standards for themselves and they have defined some criteria for that. But what is the guarantee for performing and for being loyal to these moral or moralities that they have defined? Is it possible for a person who does not believe in anything, believe in something that has been defined by themselves? So how can we guarantee that they can back such an idea?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, atheism believe in the some kind of the ethics, which is talking about the independent of religion or ethics without God. Mm-hmm. It is famous for the atheism and atheist to have these kind of ethics. They want to omit religion or God from, you know, ethical issues. Mm-hmm. And you know that you can guess which kind of, you know, ethics that we are talking about.
Yeah.
In this particular ethics, they actually, you may call it the kinds of materialistic or ethics or ethic which is around the selfish or self-interest, you know. I want to say that what matters for those people is my pleasure, my mm-hmm. absolute pleasure, and my self-interest.
True.
Okay. To some extent, some kind of centricity of self and the interest of self. And whatever related to this issue, mm-hmm. I can use that, whatever yeah. means. Mm-hmm. I want to say that what matters to these people is actually, you know, individual pleasure and individual, self-interest. And to obtain a lot of wealth and money. These are the foundation and the basis for, those people who have the same idea and to have the same culture, let's say. Mm-hmm. And of course, they use different means for obtaining those bases and, those goals. Sometimes these means can be not to lie. Or, for example, not to cheat. If you want to have some kind of business, you know, the means that I want to get my self pleasure and my self interest is to not to lie in order for another person not to lie to me. Okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I respect this guy in order that guy respect me. I do not cheat because I need to have this my self-interest, okay?
Yeah.
And because of that, all these ideals, they have been used as a means for getting my pleasure and my self-esteem.
True.
The reason that I say that they can use it as a means, in a case that there is no need for these means, for example, I have power and I do not need to have these kind of, let's say, honesty. True. And not to cheat, not to lie, and other issues, you know, ethical issues. Okay, when I have power and I do not need those ideas and those means, it means that, okay, I can forget about that. No longer I do not need these kind of means. So very I can true. Easily cheat, mm-hmm. I can easily lie, I can easily kill.
Very true.
When I have the power, I do mm-hmm. not need you, I have everything available. So why? There is no need. Mm-hmm. Okay? So my self-interest and my self-pleasure, which was a foundation and my final purpose, requires me to lie, to cheat, to kill. So mm-hmm. it's okay. I can do all of that. Mm-hmm. You know?
So what is this criteria that they are talking about? And they say that, okay, we atheists, even we have our standards and we have our criteria. So what are they that they are actually believing in?
You know, the criteria is my self-pleasure mm-hmm. and my self-interest.
Human-centrism.
Yes. Maybe you can say, not you know, myself, you know, not even talking about the human being. Because when we say human, it has some kind of societal
I mean, human-centrism in the sense of humanism. Humanism in the sense that I am the center of everything. Yeah. I am not others, not God, not anyone else. So whatever comes, whatever is important to me, that makes sense, not anything else.
Yeah, of course. This is unfortunately, I have to say that this is a dominant culture. Mm-hmm. In different countries, unfortunately, some people, they believe in that and they practice it. Mm-hmm.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Some are not calling themselves and they do not actually claim that they are atheists, but they act like an atheist. So when the importance of self comes in between, then we are the, let's say, center of all goodnesses and badnesses. So whatever is important in the universe should be looked at the level of, should be looked at to the will of me, rather than the others, or even Allah's will, Allah's order.
Exactly, you know, because if you have these kinds of idea, you know, look at everything, every ethical issues as a means for having and for obtaining my own pleasure and my self-interest, it has these consequences, okay? Mm-hmm. But let me explain the opposite side of that, which
yes,
is Islamic ethics, maybe in order to make the, you know, atheist ethic more clear mm-hmm. for our dear audience.
Yes.
In Islamic ethics, you see, we have fadail and radail, which means we have the
values and
yes,
you excellences.
Know, excellences, which is they have the their own value. They have their own value in it. And it has, talking about the other bad trait and positive traits and the negative trait. And these positive and negative traits and character, they enjoy their own, let's say, value. And, you know, in any time, in any place, you know, they obtain their value. Even, you know, if meets my, you know, this value, they meets my pleasure, or it does not meet that, I have to do that. Okay?
Very true.
And it has a strong foundation of that, and the foundation and the backing of that ideas and ethical issues in Islam is faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Mm-hmm.
You know, iman billah ta'ala wal amal as-salih, which means to have faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to have righteous action, you know, and to have the strong belief in hereafter.
Mm-hmm.
It is again very important. Let me make it clear. For example, in the verses of Noble Quran, we have ma yalfidhu min qawlin illa ladayhi raqibun atid. Whatever you express, even a single word, some angels, they are witnessing. They are present and they are witnessing and recording your wordings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Very true.
So it doesn't matter whether it serves your interest or not, your self-pleasure or not. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you need to sacrifice
mm-hmm.
for the sake of Allah, for the sake of other people. Okay? To sacrifice your life, to rescue the life of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And to, for example, we have in the, you know, a different occasion, different verses of Noble Quran, some people, including Ahlul Bayt, the pure progeny of Noble Prophet, they gave away their food.
Mm-hmm.
For three consecutive days, they did not eat, they did not have the, you know, sufficient eating, and they sacrifice it to the other people.
But such beautiful and high values and excellences cannot be looked in the atheistic worldview. Because as you said and explained earlier, so all whatever is being seen is my own self. Not others, not God, not anyone around in my vicinity, no one else.
Of course, when you do not believe in hereafter, when you do not have proper faith in Allah, when you do not have righteous action, it does not have any backing, any basis, okay? And any logic, you can say, for your ethics.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is your own pleasure and your own self-interest.
Very true.
Okay? And it can be changing, you know, because of that, some of them, they believe in the relativism of the ethical issues.
Okay? Very true, yeah.
It means that if there are not absolute ethical issues, we do not have absolute ethical, let's say, elements, and they can be changed in different time and in different circumstances.
So all the values are not absolute, rather they are all relative.
Exactly.
So everything can be looked at as a relative. So it's a sort of dangerous belief that can enter in anyone's belief, Sheikh. What is the, let's say, remedy and cure for such a bad, let's say, sickness and disease?
The remedy is actually to think about this issue, to have intellectual process and intellectual effort
mm-hmm.
to think whether in this universe I've been created whether to serve my own interest. What mm-hmm. about other people? What about poor people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, living in different countries, in different lands,
mm-hmm.
and you know, other problems. Why are you not thinking about the, you know, war striking people mm-hmm. in different countries? You know,
very true.
You know, different problems of society, different people in different land. Why are you not thinking about those people?
I want just to have a short comment on what you beautifully mentioned. I want to say that in Islamic worldview, it's not that you have to only, you need to ignore about yourself. No, we have to have your own relation. We need to define a relation with God, with our people around us and society, and with our own self, and with the nature. So these are the worldview that Islam gives us. So again, your own self is important, because man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabbah.
Your own self is important, but it is not all the story.
Oh, exactly.
It is part of the
part
story.
Of the story. Let's say one-fourth of the whole story, based on the ahadith that we
in
can refer to.
In the verse of Noble Quran, we have, وَلَا تَنْسَ نَصِيبَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا. And do not forget about your share from this material life. But
definitely.
When you have extra, give it in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Very true. Very true.
Okay?
Yeah.
Not to totally think and to concentrate only on yourself. Not to be selfish.
Not to be
self-centered. This is a point that Islam is emphasizing on.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your elaboration and scholarly explanations on this topic. So we reached to this conclusion that there is no executive guarantee for those who actually believe that they are atheists to have their moral standards up. Anyhow, all in all, we need to first think about who we are and where we are now, and then to know about our duties and look at the world, look at the universe with another eye. Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, and your respected listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban.